Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I am James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Michael Stu Stewart. Stu, what's up, buddy?
Oh, not much, James. I'm doing all right here on this lovely Tuesday evening. It is hot. It has been hot. I'm not enjoying it. I'm sweating as I sit here at my desk, but I'm ready to talk some football. We have a lot to cover tonight, so I will not take up a whole lot of time with the intro, but James, I want to hear how you are doing real quick first.
I'm recovering from an illness. In case all of you lovely listeners were curious where we were the past 2 weeks, I was on vacation in Ireland, and while I was there, I drank a lot of beer and also got a cold. So I'm recovering from that. I'm on the back end, but thank you for your concern, everybody. But yeah, we got a lot to talk about. Some big news that has popped up in the NFL over the past couple of days. And we're going to wrap up our AFC East breakdown. We're hitting the Jets and the Patriots. So I think we can go ahead and jump right into the news. And all of it is circulating around the Miami Dolphins. They, I believe yesterday, traded for Minkah Fitzpatrick, bringing him back into the team that drafted him, for Jonnu Smith and Jalen Ramsey. For us here, that Jonnu Smith to the Steelers piece is obviously the one that is the most impactful for us. And after I kind of stood on the table for him with the Dolphins last episode, I'm feeling a little weird about it. Stu, how are you feeling about it?
Well, I'm just mourning the loss of the James hype train for Jonnu Smith. Rest in peace. 2025 to 2025. Lasted a whole week and a half.
Yep.
Time to go to Ireland and back again. By the time he got back, he was gone. So, honestly, I'm sure the Steelers are in like a win now period. They either win with Aaron Rodgers or they tear it all down. And that seems like what these moves they're making, you know, speaks to me. They've only signed Jonnu Smith for a season. So they're going to have to do it now or they're not going to do it at all, basically. But the thing about it is that for fantasy-wise, it might make sense real life, but in fantasy, this is, it feels devastating to me. Well, maybe not devastating. That's kind of dramatic, but I'm on a show. I'm trying to be dramatic. It just feels like the number of fantasy-relevant tight ends was decreased by one. So Jonnu, in Miami, absolutely relevant, weekly starter, had a really good thing going at the tail half of the season. You can learn all about it in our last episode. That stuff hasn't changed. But now he goes to the Steelers. I mean, mildly okay quarterback. He's going to get some targets. But he and Pat Freiermuth are going to eat each other. They're both going to eat each other into complete fantasy irrelevance. And that stinks because, well, when the trade broke, we'd had no one else in Miami to pick up the slack. People are, you know, what are they going to do for targets? We're going to talk about how it affects all those Dolphins pass catchers. But I just want to know your thoughts. You said you were weird about it, James. I mean, have you digested it a little bit more? Your first reactions to hearing this tantalizing piece of news?
I think I feel surprisingly a little bit better about it now than I did when I first heard about it. When the news first broke, I would have agreed with you that this is just one less fantasy relevant tight end. But the more I think about it, I don't think that Pat Freiermuth as a player is going to eat into Jonnu Smith's touches. I think Jonnu Smith is really just a significantly better pass catching tight end. Freiermuth, a better blocker. But I really think that Jonnu Smith is going to be able to carve out a role for himself in Pittsburgh, provided they have a legitimate offense. This is so weird saying the Steelers are win now, because Aaron Rodgers is probably a shell of his former self. There's been so much turnover on that team. The only real consistent piece is Mike Tomlin. We don't even know if TJ Watt's going to be there. So all of that is weird. And Jonnu Smith, this guy who I was kind of looking at to be this diamond in the rough, is weird. But I really think that he can still be an impactful fantasy tight end. Maybe not like the sleeper of the draft, but at least a tight end one, at least a top 12 guy. Mm-hmm. That's my view here.
But honestly, top 12 guy for tight ends is a pretty low bar. Like, past the first six or seven guys, they're all pretty interchangeable, and you're streaming tight ends at that point anyway. But the one thing I will say that Jonnu Smith does have going for him is that Arthur Smith loves this guy. Mm-hmm. He wants him on his team, and the versatility of Jonnu Smith does shine a little bit. So hopefully there is a path to relevance. I just am a little skeptical about it.
And you said it was just one less fantasy relevant tight end. Stu, even if Jonnu Smith is canceled out by Pat Freiermuth, don't you believe in the walrus?
No. Okay, so we added, okay, everyone, second piece of news as we start looking at Miami, you know, everyone thinks, oh my gosh, this is incredible. This is more targets for Tyreek. This is more targets for Waddle. This is more targets for Achan. Achan in the first. Achan at running back three or four. Well, now, today, just hours ago, Darren Waller, the rapper Darren Waller, is coming out of retirement, 33 years old, going to the Dolphins. Look, this doesn't move my needle at all, except for my, like, what are we doing? What is the world doing? Is the music industry that bad for Darren Waller that he has to come back to football? I guess it is. But he's 33 years old. He has a storied injury history. It's been years since he was fantasy relevant in any capacity, and he's coming off of a year in retirement. Like, is he even going to get 10% of the targets, James? Like, it seems like such a non-factor to me.
Yeah, I think non-factor is a pretty good way of putting it. They needed a warm body, and maybe Darren Waller, with the history of success that he's had, might be better than other warm bodies out there. I don't know. Non-factor.
Do you think Darren Waller plays more or less than 12 games?
Less.
I would say less. It's barely a warm body.
You bring in a guy who's been out of the league, like, you're not in game shape for those. You're not staying in game shape for those years. If you're being brought back in, I'm assuming they gave him a workout. I assume they know he can at least do something or is capable of getting back into game shape. But I don't see a guy in that situation as even being a lock to make the team. Mm-mm. I mean, he probably will, because they're paying him to, but I don't know. I think taking the under on 12 is probably fair.
Yeah, you'd think they would have been reported if they brought him in for a workout. Like, not many teams can do that very secretively. But
yeah.
So, we talk about the fantasy-relevant people. I mean, it's still huge. The last couple of days have been for Tyreek, Jaylen Waddle, and Devon Achane. How does this move them, James? I do still think Achan is probably back end first at the very least, but the other guys, is this going to have a significant impact on Tyreek and Waddle?
I mean, I would say if it does, it's marginal. I said it last time we talked about the Dolphins. I'll say it again. I think what we saw with Miami at the end of last season can only be counted so much when talking about this year, because there was like a huge letdown in that team with the way the season started and with Tua's injuries and all of that. But is Tyreek still Tyreek? Is Jaylen Waddle still Jaylen Waddle? I think the latter of those is probably more likely. But if this impacts those guys at all, I do think it's marginal. It's marginal to the positive, but it is still marginal.
Do you think it shifts their ADP? I don't even think it does
probably
for me.
Not.
I wouldn't take them higher just because of this. I mean, the thing about it is like, we can try to forget last year, but we also, it's the freshest memories in our mind. I mean,
yeah,
it was such a dumpster fire.
I can't get the images of Tyreek Hill just like jogging off the line unburned from my brain. But you want to talk about the Jets and the Patriots?
Yeah, let's talk about some other dumpster fires.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't think the Patriots are a dumpster fire, but the Jets as an organization are a dumpster fire.
And that's where we're starting. Let's go to New York, baby. So, let's start with one of your guys, Stu. Let's talk about Garrett Wilson. Looking right now like the wide receiver 13, going somewhere late second through the third round. Garrett Wilson, a guy who really played pretty decently well down the stretch despite Aaron Rodgers last year. High volume, took advantage of that. This year, he's got Justin Fields as his quarterback. Guy not necessarily known for being an accurate passer. Stu, do you think wide receiver 13 is fair or a little bit of over something? What do you think?
Over? Oh, gosh. See, I've had Garrett Wilson in the last 2 years. I am a believer. I am still a believer. I am ready to get hurt again. It was not pretty last year. That is okay. It was productive. It wasn't pretty. It was productive. That's all I care about. There was a stretch, need I remind you, before Devontae Adams came in and ruined my entire season with Garrett Wilson, there was a stretch that Garrett Wilson was producing like a superstar. It was like weeks 5 to 9. He got all the attention. He had barely any competition. It was him and like Lazard out there. And he looked like a bona fide stud, you know, based off of production. It can still be the case. We're going to talk about the quarterback. Just Fields, he has shown in the past the ability to support a top flight wide receiver, that being DJ Moore back in Chicago, which feels like years and ages and eons ago. It has happened. Do I expect it to happen? No, but I do think wide receiver 13, it could be one or two spots a little bit harsh on Garrett Wilson. Right now, in PPR scoring formats, I'm seeing him at wide receiver 14 between MHJ and T. Higgins. There's maybe one or two guys I would take him above. So a slight value, but a value nonetheless. I'm ready to get burned again, James. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty similar. I think looking at Chicago Bears' Justin Fields and looking at Pittsburgh Steelers' Justin Fields, they barely seemed like the same player. And a lot of that is how Fields was used by Mike Tomlin. But then you go to the Jets. What kind of vision do they even have for him? Are they going to be building an offense around his strengths? Either way, they're going to need to pass the ball. And looking at this depth chart, there's really nobody behind Garrett Wilson, either the wide receiver or tight end position. Josh Reynolds is the next guy in line. You mentioned Alan Lazard. He's still there. There's really not much left to pass the ball to. So he's going to get volume. It's just, do the balls get to him? And if they do, he's probably going to catch him because he's very, very talented. But that's the only question. I think wide receiver 13 is probably pretty fair. I wouldn't feel bad about getting him in the third round. I'm probably not going to try to get him in the second unless, well, I just don't think I will. Mm-hmm. But another big name in this offense is Breece Hall. Guy who, for the last couple years, has been a draft day darling and a regular season not darling. Breece Hall currently, I'm seeing projected RB12. hasn't lived up to his billing, I believe you could say. Mm-hmm. Would I take him at RB12? I think there's probably other guys I would rather have in similar billing. But I think the same issue with Garrett Wilson is kind of playing a part here. What does this offense have in store for him? But also, probably an even bigger knock on him than it is to Garrett Wilson, I think Justin Fields and his running ability is going to take away from Breece Hall more than it's going to take away from any other player.
Yep.
So I'm not even really sure I want to think about Breece Hall as an RB1. That might be a little bit harsh. I don't know. Stu, what do you think?
Trusting the Jets is a tall ask. And
yeah,
as a person who's done it for a little while now, because I'm like, oh, there's going to be value in places that people don't look. Bad organizations are bad to an extent. Now we've got a whole new coaching staff in there. What's his nuts? Was it Aaron Glenn? I feel like his name is.
What, they didn't bring Adam Gase back?
No, I don't think they brought Adam Gase back. I don't even know what Adam Gase is doing. Breece Hall is one that I'm very much not interested in getting at his current ADP. There's probably three or four people beneath him that I would have a lot easier of a time taking, and maybe even a fourth if we count Omarion Hampton. Breece Hall has the pedigree. He's got the makeup. He's got the skills, but it has just never come through on a field, and that is just what it is. They've come out and said that they want to use both. It's Braylon Allen is there. They want to use him, and they also just like want to use a committee with Justin Fields, who's basically running back throwing the football, right? That's the old joke about Justin Fields. It's not good enough for me to be taking him as my borderline not wide receiver but running back one. Like, that's not something I want to be putting my faith in. I'd rather look several other places first. So pretty much now, out on him.
Hear me out here. Let's say that you've got the 2-3 flip. You've okay. got the number one overall pick. You take Saquon Barkley because you listen to me.
Or you take Jamar Chase. 2-3
flip. Or Jamar Chase. But for this specific scenario, you're taking running back. If you got the 2-3 flip, would you go Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, and double up?
No. Saquon, no, Breece? I don't, because my liver would just not thank me. Oh, that would be terrible, James. Why would you even suggest something so heinous? Oh, my God.
Just for conversation's sake.
Just for conversation's sake. Yeah. Well, you covered the other wide receivers. None of them are super relevant. There is Mason Taylor. He's a second-round pick out of LSU, a steady player. We don't know exactly what his role will be in the offense. Justin Fields, was he was good with Komet, wasn't he? That was when Komet was fairly relevant in Chicago.
Yeah, decently yeah. so.
So maybe worth a look at the end of drafts if you're really hurting or you're in a 16-team league. You go Mason Taylor and just kind of see if you strike gold. But other than that, there's not a whole lot about the Jets to be super excited about. I mean, we haven't really talked about Justin Fields by himself. He'll probably be drafted as a low-end quarterback one just based on the running prowess, but it's nothing that you can really hang your hat on. You're going to need a backup quarterback or some other streaming option throughout the season if you take Fields in your drafts.
Yeah, I've seen Justin Fields falling safely into the streaming range in stuff I was looking at today. I saw him either as QB 14 or 15. Draftable as a backup, I think. Anytime you get a guy who runs like Justin Fields does, there is hope.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to talk themselves into believing he can have options to be meaningful enough through the air, but then make his real hay on the ground. I just don't trust his arm enough. Not with a new system, even with Garrett Wilson, but with nobody behind him. I don't think I could do it. I couldn't make myself pull that trigger. And I like Justin Fields, but I just don't think I could do it.
It's just going to be so niche whether you take him or not, because are you really going to burn a valuable bench spot on a quarterback that you're just going to wait and see what he does? How many games are you going to give him? You're going to give him 3-4 games just to see how the Jets look? Like, you could be holding anything else that could be very, very valuable to you. I don't really want to do that for Fields.
Yeah, that's not happening. I thought it was interesting today while I was doing my notes. Both teams we talk about today have a pretty solid question mark at their kicker position. New guys. I think Caden Davis, guy about to play his first year in the league, is the guy projected to be the Jets kicker. Good for him. Congrats on getting to kick some balls. Jets defense, I saw earlier today, looking to be defense 11. So if you care about when you draft your defenses, just make sure you do them in the last round so you are not a loser.
Well, Caden Davis in 2024 kicked for Ole Miss. He was 24 of 29 for an 82.8 field goal percentage. That doesn't seem like it would fly in the professional league, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
He mostly missed from 50-plus, so we can kind of forgive him from that. He was only 50% from 50-plus. And those are hard kicks. I couldn't do that.
Old Lane Kiffin trotting his kicker out to do that. Patriots.
Yeah, Patriots.
Patriots.
Quietly very exciting. So they were dead
last year.
I think exciting. I think they have invested through the draft for like high value picks. They took offensive linemen, they took a running back who we're excited about, and they took a wide receiver that people are just falling over themselves to be excited about. Drake May is mobile. He played well for a really bad team last year. He played well enough for a bad team last year. And they went and signed the guy who we're probably going to talk about first. So, James, you want to hit on him before we talk about Drake May?
You want to talk a little Diggsy?
Talk a little Diggsy. We're going to take a trip on the boat.
All right. Let's talk Stephon Diggs real quick. Stephon Diggs, most famous for the Minnesota Miracle, then famous for having a decent run in Buffalo, getting some diva comments while he was there, then going to Houston, where everybody thought he was going to be the most important part of the most interesting receiving core in football. All of them got hurt, every single one of them. Stephon Diggs tore his ACL, and now he finds himself playing in New England, coming in as really the de facto wide receiver one. What can we expect from Stephon Diggs? Well, from fantasy football, I'm currently seeing him as the wide receiver 41, which seems low.
Well, he's supposed to miss the first four games or so. Supposed to, or at least that was what was reported to be. He's still like working out and making cuts and running routes, but that is baked into his ADP like a perfectly cooked fish fillet.
And that's all fine. But he's going, looking like eighth round, going among guys like Khalil Shakir, Quinshon Judkins. I'm going back and looking through my other draft outlooks from the other teams. So here's the thing about Stephon Diggs. He's not young. He's
31.
Talented. He's 31. Decently fast. Has probably some elite separation, I would say. Maybe not like Mike Evans level, but Mike Evans is also getting up there. Drake May's got to throw it to somebody. And I don't think Hunter Henry is going to be a more attractive target than Stephon Diggs. I think dropping an eighth or ninth round pick on Stephon Diggs is not a bad way to throw a mid-round dart. If you get somebody in there who you believe in a little bit more, I'm not sure that there are guys that have higher ceilings and in the middle rounds for receivers. I think it just kind of depends on what you need in those middle rounds. Mm-hmm. But, Stu, what do you think of Diggs?
I honestly really like it. As a first or second bench slot, maybe you went running back, or you took Bowers in the second round, and your wide receivers are a little bit weaker as a result. Like, stashing him and seeing what he's like when he's healthy is very, very attractive to me. I mean, if you have an IR slot, stick him in the IR slot. You could just pick somebody up for free. Like, this is, there's a lot of avenues that you can take with Diggs. And I think the biggest thing working in his favor is that, number one, he already looks really good on video, if you've seen it. And number two, he got, you said he got some diva conversations. I think he is a diva. I think he will be the squeakiest wheel on the cart if he is not getting his targets. And young guy, Drake May, I think is going to feed him. He needs that veteran presence that he just didn't really have last year. And I think it could be a very positive for fantasy relationship. I don't think the Patriots are going to be a great team, but there's going to be enough interest here for our purposes that we can't just discount them out of hand thinking that they were in complete last place last year. So I'm really in on Stephon Diggs at his current ADP. I would totally do it. In the right situation, of course.
As we kind of said, depending on team build. I like it too. I think we should go ahead and talk about Drake May. His ADP is, well, going really similarly to Justin Fields, honestly. I've seen a lot of people talking up Justin Fields' fantasy value. I haven't seen that many people talking about Drake May except us. And we talked about it in our draft winners episode. We both kind of thought Drake May was one of the big guys whose needle moved in the positive direction because of the moves that they made. And seeing him around the QB 15-16 range, very similar to Justin Fields, I think his outlook is quite a bit better than Justin Fields. And if you're someone who maybe waited to get a quarterback in their draft and believes that you should take a backup, I would take Drake May over Justin Fields in that situation. You never really know. Stephon Diggs may be back earlier than expected. Probably not, but he could be. And behind him, those options don't exactly look great. But talented kid, showed flashes, can make the best of a bad situation, and now he's got a aging superstar wide receiver in his back pocket. Stu, did I hit it? What do you think?
In redraft, I'm not even sure he's quite there to be a bench target for me. The needle is up. It is. But for a redraft league, I'm not super interested in seeing how far up it went. I'm cool with him being a waiver priority, maybe early on in the season. But right away, I don't think he really deserves to be drafted too frequently. I mean, he made the best of a bad situation. That's great. Let's see what he can do with a little bit of a better situation. In Dynasty, I'm absolutely holding on to the kid. Like, he could very well vault up in the next several years. I just don't think the fantasy relevancy is going to come in 2025. It may very well be 2026, 27, or beyond. Like, we need him to, I mean, he threw for just over 2,000 yards, 15 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. His QBR was good for 17th in the league. That's very pedestrian numbers for a full season of work. I'm going to need him to rush for a good 600 yards or something throughout the course of the season at the very least. Throw for a good 300, 400 more yards this season before I start considering him draftable. He's going to need to be in the low to mid 20s for touchdowns. He's got to make a big step this year for me. I'm excited for him. I'm pulling for him, which is weird to think about as a Colts fan growing up rooting for a New England Patriots quarterback, but I feel like I can in this situation. I just need to see it. I'm excited, but I need to see it.
Sure. Okay, let's talk running backs. Travion Henderson, rookie, is probably the guy who's going to be on most of your radars. I'm currently seeing him as the running back 20. Currently seeing him as the running back 25, going in around the fifth round. Stu, what are your thoughts on Travion Henderson?
So you got to talk about Ramondre at the same time, because this is looking a lot like a backfield that we haven't really talked about yet, which is the Chargers. Having an established, bruising running back who's been pretty mid production for many years, and now an exciting rookie like Travion Henderson was a second round pick. You know, people are looking at him to take over and be an exciting option for the Patriots. I mean, he played really, really well at Ohio State last year, averaged 7.1 yards per carry, had 10 touchdowns. Everything is there for him, but it's going to be a little bit before we see him truly emerge from this backfield and then kind of hopefully give the production that gives him more opportunities in actual NFL games. Like right now, let me control F him in the ADP charts. Travion Henderson, he's going as RB 21. So we're already expecting him to be in the top 24 backs. He's supposed to be an RB2 right away. I don't know if I would take him. He's probably not the first rookie off my board when comparing him to like Hampton or even RJ Harvey. Quinshon Judkins, I'd probably take Henderson over Judkins, perhaps just for the situation. But, you know, it might be a touch rich. Like, I'd probably take Caleb Johnson over him right now, just in how I feel about all these teams put together. So it's kind of muddy for me, James, I guess. Is it a little more clear for you?
So here's kind of why I think that Travion Henderson is getting the love that he is. Ramondre Stevenson, I'm sure you recall, got put in the proverbial doghouse last year.
Sure did.
He's currently sitting at the RB 37. Obviously, this is a different coaching staff. Matt Vrabel is no stranger to being creative with running backs. And he doesn't really have a relationship with Ramondre Stevenson going in. So we don't know what that's going to look like. But I think that people are kind of equating what Ramondre did last year to this year. And Vrabel, being another coach kind of from that Belichick coaching tree, maybe people think that he'll continue to be tough on Ramondre Stevenson and favor his guy who he drafted in Travion Henderson, which I don't think is outside the realm of possibility. But I do think Travion Henderson is a better running back than Ramondre Stevenson, definitely not as seasoned. But I think that he will end up commanding the lion's share a little bit quicker than we think. But it is still going to be a split backfield. That's just the way of the NFL right now, but that's my thought.
It's also going to be even worse. I don't know if we haven't talked about him yet, but Ramondre Stevenson fumbled last year, got benched. Who took his place? Antonio Gibson. Antonio Gibson is still there. He got over 100 carries last year as well. All three of those guys, we're going to have to figure out what this new coaching staff wants to prefer. Like, 538 yards for Gibson, 800 for Stevenson. Is there that much opportunity? I mean, you said that he was drafted, Henderson was drafted by this coaching staff, and that is not to be denied, but there's a lot of reasonable caliber running backs on the Patriots. Too many for me to think, yeah, let me go take the rookie in the sixth round or the fifth round, wherever he ends up going in your drafts. It seems a little too rich for me in this situation.
That's fair. I do think it's a little bit interesting how we choose which rookie running backs we fall over ourselves for and which ones we don't. Like, Travion Henderson, yes, very, very talented. But, like, why is Jadon Blue going in, like, the 12th?
Because he was selected rounds later.
Yeah, but I don't think he's rounds later in terms of talent. That's just me. Tight ends, Hunter Henry. Unless you had anything else to talk about.
Not particularly. It's muddy.
All right. Hunter Henry, I'm looking at him, tight end 16, falling into the pseudo-streaming category of tight ends. Not really draftable, I'd say.
No, not really draftable. 66 receptions, 600 yards. He has a couple of good weeks, but he just never strings it together, really. Like, there's no consistency there. It's not trustable. You'd love to have anything else in your tight end position, but
yeah.
Overall, tight ends are just really, really bad outside of the first three or four guys. So,
yep. And there's nothing else really to speak about for the Patriots this year. Austin Hooper is still there at the tight end position.
Man, we'll always have that one year on the Atlanta Falcons.
Yep. Another question mark at the kicker position. Looks like currently the guy is Andy... Oh, boy.
Borregales.
Borregales. Parker Romo also there. And the Patriots defense looking like the 22nd ranked.
Yeah, so not a whole lot to be excited about in that area. So
yeah. Hey, good thing we hate the Patriots, though, right?
There's a couple of cool names. I think they're not too many more years away if they keep doing the right things. But one question I had for you, James, and I know I let it go when we were talking about running backs. Was Vrabel really that creative with his running backs in Tennessee, or did he just ride Derrick Henry into the ground? Not even into the ground, because Derrick Henry's still really valuable, but you know what I mean.
He was creative with running backs, and it frustrated the hell out of me. Do you recall when Derrick Henry was in like his rookie second and third seasons, and he was sitting behind Deion Lewis?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do remember that.
That was horrific. Like, Derrick Henry would be clearly the better guy, break these huge runs, bowl people over, and then you'd get a steady dose of like three downs of Deion Lewis, check down to Deion Lewis. Derrick Henry comes in. Oh my God, this guy's so much better. Keep giving him the ball. Deion Lewis. It was terrible.
It absolutely was. Too creative.
Too creative.
Well, maybe they ground that out of him after Deion Lewis was gone. Derrick Henry only.
Yeah, I'd like to think that he's learned from his mistakes, but there's really... I mean, it's not that there's not many people like Derrick Henry. There's nobody like Derrick Henry. So, not that Travion Henderson is to be compared to Derrick Henry or Ramondre Stevenson. Neither of them to be compared to Derrick Henry or Deion Lewis. But, yeah. Creative.
Do you think Antonio Gibson could be compared to Deion Lewis?
Honestly, yeah.
There we go.
Actually,
there's the comparison.
Honestly, yeah. All right. I think we are down to the end of the episode. Yeah. Stu, any closing thoughts for our friends at home?
For as much as we thought that we'd have too much to talk about and we might split this into two episodes, we did this in 38 minutes, and that was after waxing philosophical for a little bit. Anyway, yes, so we are on social medias, Instagram, on X, I almost called it Twitter, at FantasyFootBeer. We also take beer recommendations. I would love your beer recommendations. I want to know what people drink. I actually got a beer recommendation while I was in Minnesota over the weekend, and my brother-in-law said, hey, you need to try this while you're in the airport. And I was like, I have 10 minutes for a layover. I'm probably not going to do that. Anyway, send that fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. Please, I want to try the beers that you like. So reach out to us. Talk to us. Tell us why Travion Henderson is the next coming of Derrick Henry. And you can make those comparisons. I'm not going to do it on the air, but I'm excited to hear those comparisons from you. But that's pretty much it for me, James. It's a nice episode. Nice Tuesday evening.
And Sue, oh my God, I forgot beer. What are you drinking?
Oh, yeah, yes. Last call, everybody. Last call. It's been 2 weeks. We're out of practice, apparently. So tonight, I am highlighting something from one of my favorite breweries, favorite local breweries in Indianapolis. This is the Java House Cold Brew Martini Stout. Anybody who knows me knows I love myself a dark beer. Porters and stouts are right up my alley. This has got some hefty ABV, 8.1%, but it scores pretty highly on my favorite website, beeradvocate.com. So it's pours pitch black, nice head of brown foam, smell is great. It's an obviously it's a stout, but good mouthfeel, smooth, rich, fun to drink. Highlighting that one from Sun King Brewery here in Indianapolis. James, what are you drinking to round out this evening?
So I'm actually not drinking this evening because I am recovering from a cold. I talked about it earlier. But I did want to talk about a brewery that I visited while I was in Ireland. Just had an interesting story. The Killarney Brewing and Distilling Company, based in Killarney, Ireland, did a tour of the distillery and brewery while I was there, and was very surprised to find when I went there that for the entire time that they have existed, they have had a master brewer from the United States. And not only that, their master brewer is from the Chicago area. So you go into an Irish brewery and they have a whole area dedicated to the city of Chicago, which I am very familiar with, and I love the city of Chicago. And they're trying to get their beers available in the States, but their whiskeys are already available if you are in certain markets. The Chicago area, they are available. So go out and try to find those. If their beers become available, they might be already, I'm not sure. My favorite of theirs was their Irish Red Ale called Running Red. But I'm drinking tea tonight. But I think that just about does us for tonight. Stu, always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. For all of us here at Fantasy Foot Beer, I'm James Kemp. Good night and good time.